called. The wind whipped about as if warring with itself. What place was that?
That place? Gods, it's where I'm going, isn't it? I have a fight ahead. A terrible fight. Is she my ally? My lover? Is she even real?
It was time. An end to these morbid thoughts, this brush with self-indulgence. He knew well that to give voice to certain feelings, to expose them in all their honesty, made him vulnerable to derision. Don't touch us with what you feel, we don't believe you. His eyes blinking open, he looked around. Crows on the branches, but even they were not yet ready to feed. Gruntled climbed to his feet, walked to the nearest corpse, a young man, skin of burnished bronze, braided hair black as pitch, dressed like some Reavy outlander. Stone tools, a wooden club at his waist, beautifully carved, shaped like a cutlass, the edge oiled and gleaming.
You loved that sword, didn't you? But it didn't help you, not against this.
He turned, took in the glade and spread his arms.
You died miserable. I now offer you something more, a second way.
The hair on the back of his neck lifted. Their spirits had drawn close.
You were warriors. Come with me and be warriors once again. And if we are to die, then it shall be a better death. I can offer this, but nothing more.
The last time he had done this, his followers had been alive. Until this moment, he had not even known that this was possible, this breaching of death's barrier.
It's all changing. I don't think I like it.
The spirits drifted back to their bodies, the flies scattered. Moments later, limbs twitched, mouths opened to dry rasps.
Now, Drake, we can't have them like this, can we? Heal their flesh, you piece of immortal dung.
Power filled the glade, an emanation that pushed back the vile curse of this realm, all the exultant expressions of evil that seemed to thrive unopposed in this place, swept away, refuted. He remembered sitting at a campfire, listening to Harlow going on about something, and a fragment of words returned to him now. The face across the fire, long and flickering.
War, Gruntle. Like it or not, it's the spur of civilization.
And then that lopsided grin.
Hear that, Drake? I just figured out why you've granted me this gift. It's all nothing but expedience with you. One hand blesses, but the other waits for the coin. And you'll be paid no matter what. No matter what.
21 silent warriors now faced him, their sores gone, their eyes bright. He could be cruel now and just take them.
He'll have made sure you could understand me. He'll have done that, I think.
Cautious nods.
Good. You can stay here. You can return to your people, if any are still alive. You can try to seek vengeance against the ones who killed you. But you know you'll lose. Against the evil now in your land, you are doomed. Your warriors, when you run with me, know that a fight awaits us. That is our path.
He hesitated and then spat to one side.
Is there glory in war? Come with me and let's find out.
When he set off, 21 warriors followed. And when he awakened his power, they rushed closer.
This, my friends, is called veering. And this, my friends, is the body of a tiger. A rather big one.
The three strangely garbed strangers they found walking on the trail ahead barely had time to lift their long clubs before Gruntle was among them. Once he passed, there wasn't much left of those three pale men, and he felt the pleasure of his companions, and shared it.
There's only one thing to do with evil. Take it in your jaws and crush it.
Then they were gone from the world. What place washes bones up like driftwood? Mappo's gaze narrowed on the flat, blinding stretch awaiting him. Shards of quartz and gypsum studded the colourless dead ground like knots of cacti. The horizon was level behind shimmering waves of heat, as if this desert reached to the very edge of the world.
I have to cross it.
He crouched, reached down and picked up a long bone, studied it.
Bedarin, maybe, not yet fully grown.
He collected another.
Wolf or dog jaw. So this desert was once prairie. What happened?
The bones fell with a clatter. Straightening, Mappo drew a deep breath.
I think I am getting tired of living. Tired of the whole thing. Nothing is working like it used to. Flaws are appearing. Signs of things breaking down. Inside. The very core of my spirit. But I have one thing left to do. Just one thing left. And then I can be done with all this.
He found himself drifting off, not for the first time, finding that place in his head where every thought rattled like chains, and he could only drag himself in crooked circles, the weight stealing his strength, his willingness to go on.
One thing left. It's down to managing resources, harboring the will, navigating between all the sour truths. You can live that long, Mappo. You have no choice but to live that long, or all this will be for nothing. I see the world's edge waiting for me.
He tightened the straps of his sack and then set out, at a steady jog.
It's just a desert. I've run across a few in my day. I won't go hungry, I won't go thirsty, and whatever exhaustion comes to me, well, it'll end when it's all over.
With each footfall, his nerves seemed to recoil from the contact. This was a damaged place, one vast scar upon the earth, and for all the death lining the desert's bizarre shore behind him, there was life here, inimical, unpleasant life, and it possessed intent.
You feel me, don't you? I offend you. But it is not my desire to offend. Leave me to pass, friend. And we will be done with each other.
Flies buzzed round him now. He had settled into a dog trot, his breathing steady and deep. The insects kept pace, gathering in ever greater numbers.
Death is not punishment, it is release. I have seen that all my life. Though I did not wish to, though I told myself stories to pretend otherwise, every struggle must end. Is the rest that follows eternal? I doubt it. I doubt we'd ever get off that easily. Hood, I feel your absence. I wonder what it means. Who now waits beyond the gate? So much anguish comes in knowing that each of us must pass through it alone, to then discover that once through we remain alone. No, that is too much to bear. I could have married, stayed in the village. I could have fathered children and seen in each child something of my wife, something of me. Is that enough meaning to a life? A cloth of unending folds? I could have murdered Icarium. But then, he has instincts for such things. His madness awakens so fast, so utterly fast, that I might have failed. And after killing me, his rage would have sought a new target, and many others would have died. There really was no choice. There never was. Is it any wonder I am so tired?
The flies swarmed him in a thick, glittering cloud. They sought out his eyes, but those had closed to slits. They spun round his mouth, but the gusts of breath from his nostrils drove them off. His people had been herders. They understood flies. He ignored their seething embrace. It meant nothing, and on he ran.
But then my death would have made my loved ones grieve, and there's nothing pleasant in grieving. It is hot and dry to the touch. It is weakness taken inside. It can rise up and drown a life. No, I am glad I never found a wife, never fathered children. I could not bear to be the cause of their sorrow.
How can one give so freely of love to another when the final outcome is one of betrayal? When one must leave the other to be the betrayer who dies, to be the betrayed left alive? How can this be an even exchange with death waiting at the end? He ran, and time passed. The sun tracked across half the sky. The warm ache in his legs had shaken off the torment of his thoughts again and again, leading him into a world emptied of everything. How perfect is running, this grand delusion of flight, away from our demons, ever away, until even the self sobs loose, spins lost in our wake. Perfect, oh yes, and a thing to despise. No distance can win an escape. No speed can outrun this self and all its host of troubles. It's only the sweet exhaustion that follows that we so cherish. An exhaustion so pure, it is as close to dying as we can get without actually doing so. Poets could speak knowingly of metaphors. If life is walking, then running is a life's entire span speeded up. And to act out birth to death in a single day, over and over again, has the flavour of perfect habit, for it mimics undeniable truths. Small deaths paying homage to the real one. We choose them in myriad forms and delight in the ritual. I could run until I wear out, every joint, every bone and every muscle. I could run until my heart groans older than its years and finally bursts. I could damn the poets and make the metaphor real. We are all self-destructive. It is integral to our nature. And we will run even when there's nowhere to run to and nothing terrible to run from. Why? Because to walk is just as meaningless. It just takes longer. Through the screen of whizzing flies, he saw something in the sky ahead. A darker cloud, a towering, swirling thing. Dust storm? There was no dust. A whirlwind? Maybe. But the air was still. It was in his path, although still some distance away. He watched it to track its path. The cloud remained directly ahead. Just bigger. It's coming straight at me. More flies? The insects surrounding him were suddenly frenzied, and he caught something in their manic buzzing. You're part of this, aren't you? The finders of life, and once found you, summon. He could hear that cloud now, a deeper, more frightening drone quickly overwhelming the swarming flies. Locusts. But that makes no sense. There is nothing for them to eat. There is nothing here at all. All of this felt wrong. Mappo slowed his run, halted. The flies spun round him a moment longer and then fled. He stood, breathing deep, eyes on the vast spinning pillar of locusts. And then, all at once, he understood. Diverse. Something that looked like white foam was spreading from the base of the locust cloud, surging in tumultuous waves. Gods below. Butterflies. You're all diverse. You're all one thing, one creature. The flies, the locusts, the butterflies, and this desert is where you live. He recalled the bones upon the edge. This desert is what you made. The butterflies reached him, whipped round him, so many he could no longer see the ground at his feet. The frantic breaths of their wings stole the sweat from his skin until he began shivering. Diverse, I would speak to you. Semble, show yourself to me. The locusts blighted half the sky, devouring the sun, spinning overhead and then, in a wave of rage, descending. Mappo dropped to his knees, buried his face beneath his arms, hunched down. They struck his back like a deluge of darts. As more poured down, he grunted at their weight. Bones creaked. He struggled for breath, clenched his jaws against the pain. The locusts stabbed again and again with their jaws, driven mad by the feel and scent of living flesh. But he was Trell, and his kind had skin like leather. The locusts could not draw blood, but the weight grew vast, seeking to crush him. In the gap his arms made for his face, he stared at inky darkness, and his gasp snatched up dust from the ground. Deafened by the futile clack of bladed jaws, buried in riotous darkness, he held on. He could feel the mind of the Diverse now. Its fury was not for him alone.
Who stung you so? Who in this desert drove you away? Why are you fleeing?
The being was ancient. It had not assembled in a long time, thousands of years, perhaps more. Lost now to the primitive instincts of the insects.
Shards, opals, diamonds, gems, leaves, drinkers.
The words slithered into him as if from nowhere, a girl's sing-song voice that now echoed in his mind.
Shards, opals, diamonds, gems, leaves, drinkers, go away!
With a deafening roar, the vast weight on Mappo's back burst apart, exploded outward. He sat up, tilted back his head.
Shards, opals, diamonds, gems, leaves, drinkers, go away! Go away! Go!
A song of banishing. The cloud heaved upward, twisted, and then churned past him. Another seething wave of butterflies, and then they too were gone. Stunned, Mappo looked round. He was alone.
Child, where are you? Such power in your song. Are you Forkrel Asael? No matter. Mappo thanks you.
He was covered in bruises. Every bone ached.
But still alive. Child, be careful. This Diverse was once a god. Someone tore it apart into so many pieces it can never heal. It can't even find itself. All it knows now is hunger. Not for you or me, for something else. Life itself, perhaps. Child, your song has power. Be careful. What you banish, you can also summon.
He heard her voice again, fainter now, drifting away.
Like the flies, like the song of the flies.
Grunting, he climbed to his feet, drew his sack round and loosened the drawstrings, reached in and lifted out a waterskin. He drank deep, sighed, drank a second time, and then stuffed the skin back into the sack. Tightening the shoulder straps again, he faced east and resumed running for the edge of the world.
Nice sword. Alas, this one I must use. I will give my two leathery swords to you.
Riad Elais leaned back against the knobby stone of the cave wall.
How did they get the dragons on that blade?
Silchas Ruin continued studying the weapon he had unsheathed. The flames of the hearth danced up and down its length.
There is something wrong with this, he said. The House of Hust burned to the ground with everything else. Not Carcanus itself, of course. That city didn't burn. Not precisely. But Hust, well, those forges were a prize, you see. And what could not be held had to be destroyed.
Riad glanced away at the pearl sky beyond the cave mouth. Another dawn had arrived. He'd been alone for some time, awakened to find that the Tist Andi had returned sometime in the night, blown in like a drift of snow.
I don't understand what you're saying.
The white face took on an almost human hue, bathed as it was in the firelight. But those red eyes were as unnerving as ever.
I thought I knew all the weapons forged by the Hust, even the obscure ones.
That one does not look obscure, Silchas, said Riad. It looks like a hero's weapon, a famous weapon, one with a name.
As you say, Silchas agreed, and I am not so old as to forget the ancient warning about trusting shadows. No, the one who gave me this sword is playing a game.
Someone gave it to you? In return for what?
I wish I knew.
Riad smiled.
Never bargain, knowing only the value of one side of the deal. Onrak said that to me once, or maybe it was Ulshun Pral. Silchas shot him a look. Riad shrugged, lifting himself to his feet. Do we now resume our journey? Sheathing the sword, Silchas straightened as well.
We have gone far enough, I think.
What do you mean?
I needed to take you away from Starvald Demelaine, and now I have done so.
He faced Riad.
This is what you must learn. The Elaint blood within you is a poison. I share it, of course. My brother and I chose it for ourselves. We perceived a necessity, but that is the fatal lure of power, isn't it? With the blood of Tiam within our veins, we could bring peace to Curald Galain. Of course, that meant crushing every house opposing us. Regrettable, but that sentiment was as far as the poison would permit us to go in our thoughts. The thousands who died could not make us hesitate, could not stop us from continuing, killing thousands more.
I am not you, Silchas Ruin.
Nor will you ever be, if I can help it.
Riad walked to the cave's edge, looked out on bleak, jagged rock and blinding sweeps of snow where the sun's light marched down into the valley below. Elsewhere, in shadow, the snow was as blue as the sky.
What have you done, Silchas?
Behind him, the Tist Andi replied,
What I deemed necessary. I have no doubt that Kilava succeeded in forcing your people out of that realm. They won't die, not there, not then. Udinas is a clever man. In his life, he has come to understand the pragmatism of survival. He will have led the Imas away from there, and he will find them a home, somewhere to hide from humans.
How? Riad demanded. It's not even possible.
He will seek help.
Who?
Seren Pedak. Silchas replied. Her old profession makes her a good choice.
Her child must have been born by now.
Yes, a child she knows she must protect. When Udinas comes to her, she will see how her need and his can be resolved together. She will guide the Imas to a hidden place, and in that place she too will hide with her child. Protected by Onrak, protected by the Imas.
Why can't we be just left alone?
Riad heard the anguish in his own voice and closed his eyes against the outside glare.
Riad Elais, there is a kind of fish living in rivers that when in small numbers, two or perhaps three, is peaceful enough. But when the school grows, when a certain threshold is reached, these fish go mad. They tear things apart. They can devour the life in a river for a league's length, and only when their bellies start bursting do they finally scatter.
What has that to do with anything?
Riad turned to glare at Silchas Ruin. The Tist Andi sighed.
When the gate of Starvald Demelaine opens, the Elaint will come through in vast numbers. Most will be young, by themselves little threat, but among them there will be the last of the ancients, leviathans of appalling power. But they are incomplete. They will arrive hunting their kin. Riad, if you and I had remained, seeking to oppose the opening of that gate, we would lose our minds. We would, in mindless desire, join the storm of the Elaint. We would follow the ancients. Have you never wondered why, in all the realms but Starvald Demelaine itself, one will never find more than 5 or 6 dragons in one place? Even that many demands the mastery of at least one ancient. Indeed, to be safe, Elaint tend to travel in threes.
Silchas Ruin walked up to stand beside Riad and stared out at the vista.
We are the blood of chaos, Riad Elais. And when too many of us gather in one place, the blood boils.
Then,
Riad whispered.
The Alaint are coming, and there's no stopping them.
What you say is true, but here you are safe.
Me? What of you?
Silchas Ruin's hand found the grip of his scabbarded sword.
I must leave you now, I think. I did not plan it, and I am not pleased at the thought of abandoning you.
And all that we spoke of before was a lie, cut in Riad. Our perilous mission, all of it, a lie.
Your father understood. I promised him that I would save you, and I have done so.
Why did you bother?
Because you are dangerous enough alone, Riad. In a storm, no, I could not risk that.
Then you intend to fight them after all?
I will defend my freedom, Riad.
What makes you think you can, with what you said of the ancients?
Because I am one, Riad. An ancient.
Riad stared at the tall, white-skinned warrior.
Could you compel me, Silchas Ruin?
I have no desire to even so much as attempt it, Riad. Chaos seduces. You have felt it, and soon you may witness the fullest expression of that curse. But I have learned to resist the seduction.
He smiled suddenly, and in an ironic tone added,
We, Tist Andi, are skilled at denying ourselves. We have had a long time to get it right, after all.
Riad drew his furs close about himself. His breath plumed in the bitter cold. He concentrated a moment, was answered by a billowing of the hearth's flames behind him. Heat roiled past. Silchas glanced back at the sudden inferno.
You are indeed your mother's son, Riad.
He shrugged.
I was tired of being chilled.
He then looked across at Silchas.
Was she an ancient Elaint?
The first few generations of Soul-Taken count among the ancients, yes. Tiam's blood was at its purest then, but that purity is short-lived.
Are there others like you, Silchas, in this world?
Ancients?
He hesitated and then nodded.
A few.
When the storm arrives, what will they do?
I don't know. But we who were not trapped within Starvald Demolaine all share our desire for independence, for our freedom.
So they will fight like you?
Perhaps.
Then why can I not fight beside you?
If I must defend you while defending myself, well, it is likely that I would fail on both counts.
But I am Menandor's son.
And formidable, yes. But you lack control. An ancient will see you, will see all that you are, and it will take you, tearing out your mind and enslaving what remains.
If you did the same to me, imagine how powerful you would then be, Silchas.
Now you know why dragons so often betray one another in the heat of battle. It is our fear that makes us strike at our allies before they can strike at us. Even in the storm, the ancients will trust not one of their equals, and each will possess scores of lesser slaves as protection against betrayal.
It seems a terrible way to live.
You don't understand. It is not simply that we are the blood of chaos. It is that we are eager to boil. The Alaint revel in anarchy, in toppling regimes among the towers, in unmitigated slaughter of the vanquished and the innocent. To see flames on the horizon, to see the Ankarl vultures descending upon a corpse-strewn plain, this charges our heart as does nothing else.
The storm will unleash all that on this world?
Silchas Ruin nodded.
But who can stop them?
My other swords are beside your palate, Riad Elais. They are honorable weapons, if somewhat irritating on occasion.
Who can stop them?
We'll see.
How long must I wait here? Silchas Ruin met his eyes with a steady reptilian stare.
Until the moment you realize that it's time to leave. Be well, Riad. Perhaps we will meet again. When next you see your father, do tell him I did what I promised.
He hesitated and then added,
Tell him, too, that with Kettle, I believe now that I acted hastily, and for that I am sorry.
Is it Olar Ethil? Silchas Ruin frowned.
What?
Is she the one you're going to kill, Silchas Ruin?
Why would I do that?
For what she said.
She spoke the truth, Riad.
She hurt you on purpose. He shrugged.
What of it? Only words, Riad. Only words.
The Tistandi leaned forward then over the cliff's edge and slipped out of sight. A moment later he lifted back into view a bone-white dragon, white as the snow below, where his winged shadow slipped in pursuit. Riad stood a moment longer and then turned away from the cave mouth. The fire blazed until the sword started singing in the heat.
Look at you, squatting in your own filth like that. What happened to Fen's great pride? Wasn't that his name, Fen? That Teblor war king? So he died, friend. Doesn't mean you have to fall so low. It's disgusting, is what it is. Head back into the mountains. Oh, hold on a moment there. Let's see that mace. Take the sheath off, will you?
He licked chapped, stinging lips. His whole mouth felt swollen on the inside. He needed a drink, but the post's gate had been locked. He'd slept against it through the night, listening to the singing in the tavern.
Show it to me, Teblor. Could be we can make us a deal here.
He straightened up as best he could.
I cannot yield this, he said. It is an Elaintar Alketh, with a secret name. I walked the roads of the dead to win this weapon. With my own hands I broke the neck of a Fokral Asael.
But the guard was laughing.
Meaning it's worth 4 crowns, not 2, right? Harrower's breath, you people can spin 'em, can't you? Been through Death's Gate, have you? And back out again. Quite a feat for a drunk Teblor stinking of pig shit.
I was not always this way. Of course not, friend. But here you are now, desperate for drink, with just me standing between you and the tavern. This could be Death's Gate all over again, come to think of it, eh? "'Cause if I let you through, why, the next time you leave, it'll probably be by the heels. You want through, Teblor? Gotta pay the harrower's coin. That mace. Hand it over, then.' "'I cannot. You don't understand. When I came back, you cannot imagine. I had seen where we all ended up, you see. When I came back... The drink called me. Helps me forget. Helps me hide. What I saw broke me, that's all. Please, you can see that, how it broke me. I'm begging.
Factor don't take to beggars, not here. You got nothing to pay your way in? Be off. Back into the woods. Dry as a hag's cubbyhole, true enough. Now, for that mace, well, I'll give you 3 crowns. Even you couldn't drink 3 crowns worth in a single night. 3. See? Got 'em right here. What do you say?
Father?
Get lost, lad. Me and your da's working out a business transaction here.
No deal, guard. Not for that weapon.
It's your da's to do with as he pleases.
You can't even lift it.
Wasn't planning on lifting it. But up on the wall of my brother's tavern, well, that'd make quite a sight, don't you think? Pride of place for you, Teblor, right over the hearth.
Sorry, sir.
I'm taking him back to the village now.
Until tomorrow night, or next week. Listen, lad, you can't save them that won't be saved.
I know, but the dragon killer, that I can save.
Dragon killer? Old name. Too bad dragons don't exist.
Son, I wasn't going to sell it. I swear that. I heard, Father. I wasn't. The elders have agreed, Father. The resting stone waits.
It does? Hey now, you two. Boy, did you say resting stone?
Best you pretend you never heard that, sir.
That vicious shit's outlawed. King's command. You, Dar. Your son says the elders are going to murder you under a big fucking boulder. You can claim sanctuary.
Sir, if you take him inside the fort, we will have no choice.
No choice? No choice but to do what?
It's better if none of this ever happened, sir.
I'm calling the captain.
If you do that, this will all come out. Sir, do you want to start the Teblor on the path to war? Do you want us to burn your fledgling colony to the ground? Do you want us to hunt down and kill every one of you? Children, mothers, the old and wise? What will the First Empire think of a colony gone silent? Will they cross the ocean to investigate? And the next time your people come to our shore, will we meet you not as friends but as enemies?
Son, bury the weapon with me, and the armor, please.
The youth nodded.
Yes, Father.
This time when I die, I shall not return.
That is true.
Live long, son, as long as you can.
I shall try. Guard?
Get out of my sight, both of you.
On to the forest trail, away from the trading post, the place where Teblor came down to surrender everything, beginning with dignity. He held his son's hand and did not look back.
There is nowhere to drink in the realm of the dead.
I am sorry, Father.
I'm not, my son. I'm not.
Ublala sat up, wiping at his eyes.
They killed me! Again!
Ralata stirred beside him, twisting to lift her head and study him with bleary eyes. A moment later, her head disappeared again beneath the furs. Ublala looked round, found Draconis standing nearby, but the warrior's attention remained fixed on the eastern horizon, where the sun's newborn light slowly revealed a rocky, glittering desert. Rubbing at his face, the giant stood.
I'm hungry, Draconis. I'm chilled. My feet hurt. I got dirt under my nails and there's things living in my hair. But the sexing was great.
Draconis glanced over.
I had begun to doubt she would relent, Toblakai.
She was bored, you see. Boredom's a good reason, don't you think? I think so. I'll do more of that from now on with women I want to sex.
One brow arched.
You will bore them into submission, Ublala?
I will. Soon as we find more women, I'll bore them right to the ground. Was that a dragon you turned into? It was hard to see. You were all blurry and black like smoke. Can you do that whenever you like? You gods got it good, I think, being able to do things like that. Hey, where did that fire come from?
Best begin cooking your breakfast, Ublala. We have far to walk today, and it will be through a warren, for I like not the look of that desert ahead.
Ublala scratched his itchy scalp.
If you could fly, why don't you just go where you're going? Me and my wife, we can find someplace else to go. And I can bury the mace and the armor right here. I don't like them. I don't like the dreams they give me.
I will indeed leave you, Ublala, but not quite yet. As for the weapons, I fear you will need them soon. You will have to trust me in this, friend.
All right, I'll make breakfast now. Is that half a pig? Where's the other half? I always wonder that, you know, when I'm in the market and I see half a pig. Where's the other half? Did it run away? Relata, did you hear me make a joke? As if half pigs can run. No, they'd have to kind of hop, wouldn't they? Hop, hop, hop.
From under the furs, Relata groaned.
Ublala.
Yes, Draconis?
Do you believe in justice?
What? Did I do something wrong? What did I do? I won't make jokes no more, I promise.
You've done nothing wrong. Do you know when something is unfair?
Ublala looked round desperately.
Not at this moment, friend. I mean in general. When you see something that is unjust, that is unfair, do you do something about it? Or do you just turn away? I think I know the answer, but I need to make certain.
I don't like bad things, Draconis, Ublala muttered. I tried telling that to the Toblakai gods when they were coming up out of the ground, but they didn't listen. So me and Iron Bars, we had to kill them.
Draconis studied him for some time, and then he said, I believe I have just done something similar. Don't bury your weapons, Ublala. He had left his tent well before dusk to walk the length of the column among the restless soldiers. They slept badly or not at all, and more than one set of red-shot, bleary eyes tracked Ruthen Gud as he made his way to the rear. Thirst was a spreading plague, and it grew in the mind like a fever. It pushed away normal thoughts, stretching out time until it snapped. Of all the tortures devised to break people, not one came close to thirst. Among the wagons now, where heaps of dried, smoked meats remained wrapped in hides, stacked in the beds. The long, knotted ropes with rigged harnesses were coiled up in front of each wagon. The oxen were gone. Muscle came from humans now, carrying food no one wanted to eat. Food that knotted solid in the gut. Food that gripped hard with vicious cramps and drove strong men to their knees. Next on the trail were the ambulance wagons, burdened with the broken, the ones driven half mad by sun and dehydration. He saw the knots of fully armed guards standing over the water barrels used by the healers, and the sight distressed him. Discipline was fraying, and he well understood what he was seeing. Simple need had the power to crush entire civilizations, to bring down all order in human affairs,
to reduce us to mindless beasts. And now it stalks this camp, these soldiers.
This army was close to shattering. The thirst gnawed ceaselessly. The sun cut a slice on the western horizon, red as a bloodless wound. Soon the infernal flies would stir awake, at first drowsy in the unwelcome chill, and then rushing in to dance on every exposed area of skin, as if the night itself had awakened with 100,000 legs. And then would come the billowing clouds of butterflies, keeping pace overhead like silver clouds tinted jade green. They had first arrived to feed on the carcasses of the last slaughtered oxen, and now they returned each evening, eager for more. He walked between the wagons with their moaning cargo, exchanging occasional nods with the cutters who moved among their charges with moistened cloths to press against blistered mouths. No pickets waited beyond the refuse trench. There seemed to be little point in such things. Only a row of grave mounds, with a crew of a dozen diggers working on a few more with picks and shovels. Beneath the ground's sun-baked surface there was nothing but stone-hard white silts, deep as a man was tall. At times, when the pick broke a chunk loose, the pressed bones of fish were revealed, of types no one had ever seen before. Ruthen Gud had chanced to see one example, Some massively jawed monstrosity was etched in rust-red bones on a slab of powdery silt. Enormous eye sockets above rows upon rows of long fangs. He'd listened to the listless conjecture for a short time, and then wandered on without adding any comment of his own. "From the deepest ocean beds," he could have told them, but that would have slung too many questions his way, ones he had no desire to answer.
"How the fuck do you know that?"
Good question. No, bad question. He'd kept silent. Out past the diggers now, ignoring them as they straightened to lean on shovels and stare at him. He walked on to the trail the column had made, a road of sorts where the sharp stones had been kicked clear by the passage of thousands of boots. 20 paces, 30, well away from the camp now. He halted.
"All right, then. Show yourselves."
He waited, fingers combing through his beard, expecting to see the dust swirl up from the path, lift into the air, find shape. The simple act of setting eyes upon a T'lani Mas depressed Ruthengard. There was shame in making the wrong choice. Only a fool would deny that. And just as one had to live with the choice, so too was one forced to live with the shame. Well, perhaps live wasn't the right word, not with the T'lani Mas.
"Poor fools. Make yourselves the servants of war. Surrender everything else. Bury your memories. Pretend that the choice was a noble one, and that this wretched existence is good enough. Since when did vengeance answer anything? Anything of worth? I know all about punishment, retribution. Wish I didn't, but I do. It all comes down to eliminating that which offends. As if one could empty the world of bastards or scour it clean of evil acts. Well, that would be nice. Too bad it never works. And all that satisfaction, well, it proves short-lived, tasting like dust."
No poet could find a more powerful symbol of futility than the T'lani Mas. Futility and obstinate stupidity.
"In war, you need something to fight for. But you took that away, didn't you? All that you fought to preserve had ceased to exist. You condemned your entire world to oblivion, extinction. Leaving what? What shining purpose to drive you on and on? Oh yes, I remember now. Vengeance."
No swirls of dust, just two figures emerging from the lurid, dust-wreathed west, shambling on the trail of the bone hunters. The male was huge, battered, hulking. His stone sword, carried loosely in one hand, was black with sun-baked blood. The female was more gracile than most T'lani Mas, dressed in rotted sealskins, and on her shoulder a small forest of wood, bone, and ivory harpoons. The two figures halted 5 paces from Ruthengard. The male bowed his head.
"Elder, we greet you."
Ruthen scowled.
"How many more of you are out there?"
"I am Kalt Urmanal, and the bone caster at my side is Nom Kala of the Brold. The two of us are all that are here. We are deserters."
"Are you now? Well, among the bone hunters, desertion is punishable by death. Tell me, since that obviously won't work, how do the T'lani Mas punish deserters, Kalt?"
"They don't, Elder. Deserting is punishment enough."
Sighing, Ruthengard looked away.
"Who leads the T'lani Mas army, Kalt? The army you fled?"
The female, Nom Kala, answered.
"Fast sword, Onos Tulan. Elder, there is the smell of ice about you. Are you Jagat?"
"Jagat? No. Do I look like a Jagat?"
"I do not know. I have never seen one."
"Never what?" "I haven't washed in some time, Nom Kala."
He combed his beard.
"Why did you follow us? What do you want with the bone hunters? No, wait. Let us return to that later. You say that Onos Tulan, the first sword, leads an army of T'lani Mas. Which clans? How many bone casters? Do they walk this same desert?
How far away? Kaltur Manal said, Far to the south, Elder. Of bonecasters there are few, but of warriors there are many. Forgotten clans, remnants of armies broken on this continent in ancient conflicts. Onos Tulan summoned them.
No, said Nomkala. The summons came from Olar Ethil in the making of Onos...
Shit! Ruthen swore. Both Tlanimas fell silent. This is turning into a real mess. Ruthen clawed again at his beard, glared at the undead warriors. What is she planning, do you know?
She intends to wield the first sword, Elder, Nomkala replied. She seeks redemption.
She has said this to you, Bonecaster?
No, Elder, she has not. She remains distant from Onos Tulan, for now. But I was born on this soil. She cannot walk it with impunity, nor hide the power of her desires. She journeys eastward, parallel with Onos Tulan.
Nomkala hesitated and then added,
The First Sword is also aware of her, but he remains defiant.
He is a child slayer, Elder, said Kaltur Manal. A black river has drowned his mind, and those who chose to follow him can no longer escape its terrible current. We do not know the First Sword's intent. We do not know the enemy he will choose, but he seeks annihilation. Theirs or his own, he cares not how the bones will fall. What has driven him to such a state? Ruthengard asked, chilled by the warrior's words.
She has, Nomkala replied.
Does he know that?
He does, Elder.
Then could Olar Ethil be the enemy he chooses?
Both Tlanimas were silent for a moment, and then Kaltur Manal said,
We had not considered that possibility.
It seems she betrayed him, Ruthen observed. Why shouldn't he return the fever?
He was noble once, said Kalt, honorable. But now his spirit is wounded, and he walks alone no matter how many follow behind him. Elder, we are creatures inclined to excess in our feelings.
I had no idea, Ruthen said in a dry tone. So while you have fled one nightmare, alas, you have found another.
Your wake is filled with suffering, Nomkala said. It was an easy path to follow. You cannot cross this desert. No mortal can. A god has died here.
I know.
But he is not gone.
I know that, too. Shattered into a million fragments, but each fragment lives on, diverse. And there is no hope of ever assembling back into a single form. It's too late, and has been for a long time.
He waved at the flies.
Mindless, filled with pathetic need, understanding nothing.
He cocked his head.
Not so different from you, then.
We do not deny how far we have fallen, said Kaltur Manal.
Ruthengard's shoulders sagged. He looked down.
So have we all, Tlanimas. The suffering here is contagious, I think. It seeps into us, makes bitter our thoughts. I am sorry for my words.
There is no need to apologize, Elder. You spoke the truth. We have come to you because we are lost. Yet something still holds us here, even as oblivion beckons us with the promise of eternal peace. Perhaps, like you, we need answers. Perhaps, like you, we yearn to hope.
He twisted inside at that, was forced to turn away.
Pathetic! Yield them no pity.
Struggling against tears, he said,
You are not the first. Permit me to summon your kin.
5 warriors rose from the dust behind him. Uragal the Woven stepped forward and said,
Now we are 7 again. Now, at last,
The House of Chains is complete.
Hear that? All here now, Fallen One. I didn't think you could get this far. I really didn't. How long have you been building this tale, this relentless book of yours? Is everyone in place? Are you ready for your final doomed attempt to win for yourself whatever it is you wish to win? See the gods assembling against you. See the gates your poison has frayed, ready to break asunder and unleash devastation. See the ones who stepped up to clear this path ahead. So many have died. Some died well, others died badly. You took them all, accepted their flaws, the weak ones, the fatal ones, accepted them and blessed them. And you weren't nice about it either, were you? But then, how could you be? He knew then, with abject despair, that he would never comprehend the full extent of the crippled god's preparations. How long ago had it all begun? On what distant land? By whose unwitting mortal hand? I'll never know. No one will. Win or fail, no one will. In this, he is as unwitnessed as we are. Adjunct, I am beginning to understand you, but that changes nothing, does it? The book shall be a cipher, for all time, a cipher. Looking up, he found that he was alone. Behind him, the army was struggling to its feet. Behold, night is born, and we must walk with it. You had the right of that, Galan. He watched the burial crew rolling wrapped corpses into the grave pits. Who were those poor victims? What were their names? Their lives? Does anyone know? Anyone at all?
He's not broached a single cask.
Pors shook his head.
Not yet. He's as bad off as the rest of us, sir.
Kindly grunted, glanced over at Feridan's sort.
Tougher than I'd have expected.
There are levels of desperation, she said, so he hasn't reached the next one yet. It'll come. The question is, what then, kindly? Expose him? Watch our soldiers tear him limb from limb? Does the adjunct know about any of this?
I'm going to need more guards, said Pors. I will speak to Captain Fiddler, kindly said. We'll put the marines and the heavies on those posts. No one will mess with them.
Pors scratched something on his wax ledger, read over what he'd written, and then nodded.
The real mutiny is brewing with the hall teams. That food is killing us. Sure, chewing on dried meat works up some juices, but it's like swallowing a Bedouin cow's afterbirth after it's been 10 days in the sun.
Feridan's sort made a choking sound.
Wall's foot, Pors. Couldn't you paint a nicer picture?
Pors raised his eyebrows.
But Fist, I worked on that one all day.
Kindly rose.
This night is going to be a bad one, he said. How many more are we going to lose? We're already staggering like Tlani Mas. Worse than a necromancer's garden party.
Pors threw in, earning another scowl from Faradan's sort. His smile was weak, and he returned to the wax tablet.
Keep an eye on Blistig's cash, Pors.
I will, sir. Kindly left the tent, one wall of which suddenly sagged.
They're folding me up,
Pors observed, rising from the stool and wincing as he massaged his lower back.
I feel 30 years older.
We all do,
Sort muttered, collecting her gear.
Live with it.
Until I die, sir.
She paused at the tent entrance. Another wall sagged.
You're thinking all wrong, Pors. There is a way through this. There has to be.
He grimaced. Faith in the adjunct untarnished, then? I envy you, Fist.
I didn't expect you to fold so quickly, she said, eyeing him.
He stored his ledger in a small box and then looked up at her.
Fist, sometime tonight the hall crew will drop the ropes. They'll refuse to drag those wagons one more stride, and we'll be looking at marching on without food. And when that happens, do you understand what it will mean? It will mean we've given up. It'll mean we can't see a way through this. Fist, the Bone Hunters are about to announce their death sentence. That is what I will have to deal with tonight. Me first, before any of you show up. So stop it from happening. He looked at her with bleak eyes. How? She found she was trembling. Guarding the water. Can you do it with just the Marines? His gaze narrowed on her, and then he nodded. She left him there, in his collapsing tent, and set out through the breaking camp.
Talk to the heavies, Fiddler. Promise me we can do this. I'm not ready to give up. I didn't survive the wall to die of thirst in a fucking desert.
Blistig glared at Shelemasa for a moment longer, and then fixed his hate-filled eyes on the Cundril horses. He could feel the rage flaring inside him.
You bitch. Look what you're doing to us. All for some war we don't even want. Just kill them, he commanded.
The young woman shook her head. Heat flushed his face.
We can't waste the water on the horses.
We aren't, Fist.
What do you mean?
The horses get our allotted water, Shelemasa said, and we drink from the horses.
He stared, incredulous.
You drink their piss?
No, Fist, we drink their blood.
Gods below. Is it any wonder you all look half dead?
He rubbed at his face, turned away.
Speak the truth, Blistig. It's all you have left. You've had your cavalry charge, Cundril, he said,
watching a troop of heavies marching past, going the wrong way.
There won't be another, so what's the point?
When he turned back, he saw that she had gone white.
The truth, nobody has to like it. The time has come for hard words, he said. You're done. You've lost your war leader and got an old woman instead, a pregnant one at that. You haven't got enough warriors left to scare a family of berry pickers. She just invited you along out of pity. Don't you see that?
That's enough, snapped another voice.
He turned to see Hanavat standing behind him. Blistig bared his teeth.
I'm glad you heard all that. It needed saying. Kill the damned horses. They're useless.
She studied him with flat eyes.
Fist Blistig, while you hid behind Aran's precious walls, the Wiccans of the Seventh Army fought a battle in a valley, and in that battle they mounted a charge upslope into a wall of the enemy. They won that battle when it seemed they could not. But how? I will tell you. Their shamans had selected a single horse, and with tears in their eyes they fed on its spirit, and when they were done that horse was dead. But the impossible had been achieved, because Coltane expected no less.
I hid behind a fucking wall, did I? I was the garrison commander. Where else would I be?
The adjunct has asked us to preserve our horses. And this we shall do, Fist, because she expects no less from us. If you must object, deliver your complaint to the adjunct. As for you, as you are not the Fist in command of the Cundril, I tell you now that you are no longer welcome here.
Fine. Go ahead and choke on that blood, then. I spoke out of concern, and in return you do nothing but insult me.
I know the reasons behind your words, Fist Blistig. Hanavat said levelly.
He met her eyes, unflinching, and then, shrugging, he said,
The slut speaks.
He turned and left them. As the Fist walked away, Shelemasa drew a shaky breath and stepped close to Hanavat.
Mother?
She shook her head.
I am fine, Shelemasa. The fever thirst is on Fist Blistig. That and nothing more. He said we were done. I will not be pitied, not by anyone. The Cundril...
The adjunct believes we are still of worth, and so do I.
Now let us tend to our beasts. Do we have enough fodder?
Shelemasa shook herself and then nodded.
More than we need, in fact.
Good. And our water? She winced. Hanavat sighed and then arched her back with a groan.
I'm too old to think of her as my mother, she said.
and yet I do. We still breathe, Shalamasa, and we can still walk.